Okay, reading from the Jiva Dharma of Chapter 16. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksur Mlutam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bhayebhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Well, greetings from Mayapur. You know, I'm calling through Skype. Last time there was a short time where you couldn't hear me so clearly. But overall, it's been okay. You'll just have to tolerate that while I'm here in Mayapur, because it's the only way I can make long-distance phone calls affordably, just the Indian system. You know, in a couple of weeks I'll be back in Vrindavan. But Mayapur is Odarya Dham, the place of magnanimity. And you can really feel the grace. I know in my chanting, you know, I'm making an effort, the same effort before, but the clarity is at a whole other level. And the only way you can explain it is Krishna's mercy, is Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And even yogis, when they chant on mantras, they understand the general principle that when you chant on mantras, the clarity and focus of your clarity and focus is much more pronounced, because the object of your meditation is helping you to focus by manipulating the modes of nature that provide obstacles. But here, it's not only the mantra, but it's the Dham and the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's the only explanation I could give. And I'm also here giving my class in the evening, and we're really enjoying the Anchalila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 1. And I'm getting such a wonderful response, and it's also translated into Russian. There's a large Russian community here, and they're starving for good translations of lectures, and the people I live with are the best translators, Jagadish and Yugala. It's so interesting. In my class, after class, maybe Gail, you'll remember her. I don't know if you will or not, but someone came up to me and was so appreciative of class, said, "I haven't seen you in 22 years. Her name was Vrajalalana, from the Ukraine, and she was in Boston for a time. I'm not sure if she's in New Jersey, but
well,
Boston.
That's only my best friend, Maharaj.
What's that?
That's only like okay. My best friend.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I haven't seen her in... Yeah, we can remute your phone or whatever it takes. Yeah, because it's... I haven't seen her in 22 years, and her guru gave her son her son the name, and the, her son is named after me. But anyway, it's just really nice. Now we're in the section about Jiva Tattva, and we went through an extensive analysis by Vrajanath's very piercing, logical questions about Jiva Tattva to his guru, Babaji Maharaj, trying to understand why God created a living entity that has to suffer, that's marginal, that's open to options. And it was very deep discussion, and I only feel that the ultimate realization and answer of it. Okay, good. Okay, maybe just come after the class. Okay, it's just. I think the ultimate realization of it is it will be an experience of a deeper experience of reality than just an intellectual understanding of it. Although it's kind of coming clear to me. But the last explanation he gave, is he described the material world like a prison. And the analogy of a prison is that from the perspective of the prisoner, this prisoner's suffering, he's restricted. But from the overall perspective of the government, the prisoner is being helped by being rectified. And then there was a discussion, what are, you know, then okay, Vrajanath just went on, and he said, what are the shackles? And the shackles are the modes of material nature, which restrict you according to your conditioning. Things in the mode of passion shackle you. And what is shackles? Shackles are only the restriction, the prison is only the desire to enjoy separate from God. That's the only prison. And Krishna's facilitating that. That's the prison. Like the story of the disciple who was very sincere and trying to bring firewood, but it was, I guess it must have rained. And he said, he came back and said, I couldn't find any fire. And the guru said, rascal, go to hell. So he was such a sincere disciple, he went to hell. And he was happy. He saw everybody burning at the stake. And then he asked Yamaraj, can I have some fire? And Yamaraj said, there's no fire here. So what do you mean? Look at that fire. Oh, he said, oh, they brought their own fire. So we bring our own shackles. God is just facilitating our desires to enjoy separate from him, either by selfishly wanting peace, selfishly wanting intense activity, selfishly wanting inertia. And somehow, although we are spiritual and we're pure, somehow it causes the pure soul, Maya causes the pure soul to reflect his consciousness and identify with matter. So the soul remains pure, but at the same time is in the illusion. It's just like a healthy person can dream that he has a disease. He's still pure, but he suffers the disease due to illusion. So that's basically the material nature. And then Vrajanath asked, what type of activities does the jiva perform? And he listed two activities. He tries to enjoy, and then he tries to counteract the suffering, which is actually based on the enjoyment. Because the enjoyment is the consciousness that you want to be. To be the enjoyer means to be something that we're not. The material enjoy. Material, when I say enjoyer, I mean control and dominance over objects. So, to be the enjoyer, only happens in the illusion that we're the enjoyer, which is the identification of the body. And the more intense the spirit of enjoyment is, the more intense that desire is, the more we are engrossed in the bodily concept of life, and the more we suffer. I remember reading in a commentary in the first chapter of Gita called Yoga of Dejection, nice point that a pinch of suffering is felt more than a ton of happiness. So we enjoy in so many ways, but it heightens also our sense of suffering, which is felt more intensely than the enjoyment. So he explains in detail these two, how one tries to enjoy, and then the second type, just trying to avoid suffering. And the entire life of the illusion jiva is wasted in trying to fulfill desires and avoid suffering. All based on the bodily concept of life. So, he's explaining how the jiva is bound in Maya, whether it's punya or papa, whether it's pious activities or sinful activities, he's identifying with the body and he's suffering. Vayam dutiya binivesita shat, the duality of vayam dutiya binivesita shat of duality and suffering. Okay, now we'll kind of go on for today. Wouldn't Maya purpose have been served if he only covered the jiva with the subtle body? And Babaji said the gross body is also necessary because the subtle body cannot perform work. Desires develop in the subtle body because of the activities that the jiva performs in his gross body, and the jiva receives another gross body that's suitable to fulfill those desires. Somehow or other, the subtle body is thinking, feeling, and willing, but it needs the gross body to carry it out. And that is how Maya serves its purpose. You get a corresponding body according to your mind. Therefore, faith is the index of the mind. The face is the index of the mind. Um, somehow we have awareness, we have consciousness, we have thoughts, but we require a body to carry it out. And we also get a spiritual body, or develop a spiritual body, or awaken a spiritual body to serve Krishna. The answer to these questions is basically, how has God organized the world? I'm not sure. Well, why he's done it a particular way or another? No, this is the way he's done it. Now, Vrajanath, what is the connection between karma and its fruits? According to the Mamsa school of thought, Ishvara cannot award the fruits of karma because he is only an imaginary object. The followers of these schools say that performing karma produces a tattva called apurva. And apurva gives the fruits of all the karmas. Is this true? This is called karma mimamsa school. And to explain what that school is, I'll just tell one story. I was visiting some friends in Jayapur, Pancharatna and what's the name of the other person? Ramanuja. And they're establishing this Jayapur temple. And somehow we went to their astrologer. They had an astrologer. So we were talking to the astrologer, and then the astrologer's guru comes in. And it's kind of like a cartoon. You know, he's kind of a nice-looking man, older, but, you know, with flowing gray hair and rings on every finger to counteract different planetary influences and, you know, very overweight with a bungle, Bundy, and, you know, and the astrologer, that was his guru, comes and he stops and, you know, he takes out all the biscuits and the teas and starts to feed him. And then he sees me and sees the others as Vaishnavas. And with such scorn, he looks at, you know, what will your God do, you know, with, you know, when there is a Swati Nakshas, you know, the karma is supreme. Basically, that's what it is. Karma is supreme. Whatever the karma happens, happens. This is the way the world works. So, he wants to know, what is the relationship between karma, our activities, and the fruits of karma? And the Mamamsas say, well, it is in God. Because I guess they don't even believe in God. But he said, it is in God. Because we're talking about the jiva, and the jiva is suffering, and the activities. So now's the explanation. Babaji says the followers of the Mamamsa school do not know the actual meaning of the Vedas. They have a very basic understanding that the Vedas generally prescribe various types of sacrifice. And they've concocted a philosophy based on this, but their doctrine is not found anywhere in the Vedas. So they find the Vedas that there's sacrifices that give the results, and they determine from that that karma is supreme. And that you're just getting this by your karma, your activities. You know, God is not there. On the contrary, the Vedas state very clearly that Ishvara awards all the fruits of karma. For example, Svetashvatara Upanishads, Mundaka Upanishads, and Rig Veda state, Tvasuparna Sayuja Sakaya Samanam Riksham Parishavashjate Tayor anyad pipalam shvad. Tayor anyad pipalam shvad jati. Anashdananyo pichakasit. Shiradakshai Vishnu and the Jiva residing in this temporary body like two friendly birds in a pipala tree. Of these two birds, one, the Jiva, tastes the fruits of the tree according to the karma, while the other, Paramatma, does not taste the fruits, but simply observes as a witness. The purport of this shloka is that this samsara, material world, and material body is like a pipala tree, which two birds are perched. One of these is the conditioned Jiva, and the other is his friend Ishvara Paramatma. The first bird tastes the fruits of the tree, while the other bird simply watches him. This means that the Jiva, who is bound by Maya, performs karma and enjoys the fruits that Ishvara, the Lord of Maya, awards according to the Jiva's karma. This pastime of Sri Bhagavan continues until the Jiva turns towards him. Now, where is the apurva of the followers by Mimsa philosophy here? Think about this yourself. Godless doctrines can never be complete and perfect in all respects. Here the verse indicates that what actually is happening that the Jiva has activities and it's God who is offering the fruits of those activities through the law of karma. That's the fact. It's God who's in control, and he's offering the fruits of one's activities by his own material energy and the law of karma. And this is done to somehow or other frustrate the living entity with the desire to act independent from God, which is a disconnect from one's soul and one's joy. So God is trying to turn the living entity from this by giving him the fruits of his karma, and he's observing it. But why is he there observing it? He's just waiting for him to turn. And the whole purpose of what the living entity is going through is to turn to God. That's the whole purpose of everything we go to, as an inspiration to somehow turn to God. Because that connection is where our real self lies. And that connection is where our real happiness lies. Vrajanath, why have you said that karma is beginningless? Babaji, the root of all karma is the desire to perform karma. And the root cause of this desire is avidya ignorance. Avidya ignorance is forgetfulness of the truth. I am an eternal servant of Krishna. And it does not have its origin in mundane time. Rather, it originates in the tattvastha junction of the spiritual material worlds. That is why karma does not have its beginning in mundane time, and therefore is called beginningless. So it's interesting. He says originates, but origin deals with time. So it originates in a realm where there's no time. Time is a law to subject people. This is so hard to understand because we live in a world where time is absolute. When it moves, the past is gone. And we can't stop it. We can't stop time. So time dominates us, and time purifies us. And time takes everything away from us. You can see how significant time is for self-realization. But the ultimate reality is not subjected by time because God is absolute. So karma is considered beginningless because it according to this, it says, it originates in some place that's beyond mundane time, and that's the Tathasta Shakti. I mean, if you meditate on it, that time is not an ultimate reality. It's very, very far out. That time is not an ultimate reality. We have no experience of that. But it makes sense. What is the difference between Maya and Avidya? Maya is a Shakti of Krishna. Sri Krishna has created the material universe through her and has instigated her to purify the jivas who are averse to him. Maya has two aspects, avidya and pradan. Avidya is related to the jivas, where pradan is related to inert matter. So Maya is a Shakti. So avidya is a division of the Maya Shakti, but there's also pradan. And the avidya acts upon the living entity, where the pradan acts on matter. The entire inert, mundane world is originated from pradan, where the jiva's desire to perform material activity originates in avidya. There are two other divisions of Maya, named vidya and avidya, knowledge and forgetfulness, both of which are related to the jiva. Avidya binds the jiva, whereas vidya liberates him. So avidya is specific in relationship to the living entity, but the material energy goes beyond the living entity to inert things. The faculty of avidya keeps working as long as the punishable jiva continues to forget Krishna. When he becomes favorable to Krishna, this is replaced by the faculty of vidya, brahmagyan, and so on, are only particular activities of the tendency for knowledge, vidya vritti. When intelligence first develops, the jiva tries to engage in auspicious activities. And when intelligence has matured, spiritual knowledge manifests. Avidya covers the jiva, and vidya removes that covering. Nice. Knowledge and ignorance. Ignorance covers, knowledge uncovers. And what is the function of the pradhan? Now, I think we'll just finish up with this today because it's kind of deep, but we'll go slowly and we'll finish this answer, pradhan. When Bhagavan's glance, represented by time, kala, stimulates maya prakriti, it first creates the unmanifest aggregate of the material elements, mahatattva. So Krishna glances on time, and it stimulates his energy, the Maya Shakti, and it first creates an unmanifested aggregate of material elements. That's called the mahatattva. Matter is created by the stimulation of the faculty or dravya called pradhan. So it's unmanifest, and when it becomes manifest, which is dravya, matter, the Maya Shakti is stimulated by pradhan. So there's mahatattva and pradhan. Mahatattva is unmanifest, and pradhan is when it becomes manifest. False ego, ahankara, is born from a transformation of mahatattva, and space, akash, is created from a tamasika, tamasika, transformation of the false ego. Air is created from a transformation of space. Light is created from a transformation of air. Water is created by a transformation of light. And earth is created by the transformation of water. This is how the material elements are created. They are called the five gross elements. So it goes from subtle to gross. So the most subtle is Mahatattva. And then the Ahankara is manifested, which is the most subtle material element. It's the material element that connects the soul in identification with a limited body. So that's the first manifestation, because that's what the whole world is about. And then from that, a transformation of the false ego becomes space, where there is sound, and then air, which you can also, in addition to hear, you can feel. And then light, which in addition you can see, and then water, with addition you can taste, and then earth, with the addition that you can smell it. So it becomes grosser and grosser, and this is how the material elements are created, and they are called the five gross elements of the Panchamahabhutas. Now hear how the five sense objects, Pancha Tanmatra, are created. So now you have matter, now the sense objects. Kala time stimulates the faculty of Prakriti called Avidya and creates the tendency within the Mahatattva for karma and jnana. When the karma propensity of Mahatattva is transformed, it creates knowledge, jnana, and activities, kriya, from sattva and rajaguna respectively. Mahatattva is also transformed to become ahankara. Intelligence, buddhi, is created from a transcendence of ahankara. Sound, shabda, which is the property of space, is created from the transformation of buddhi. The property of touch, sparsha, is created from the transformation of sound and includes both touch quality of air and sound quality of space. Prana, life, air, energy, oja, and strength, bala, are created from the quality of touch. From a transformation of touch, the property of form and color, rupa, is in illuminating objects is generated. Fire has three qualities, namely form, touch, and sound. When fire is transformed by time, it is transformed to the four qualities, taste, form, touch, and sound, and water. And when they are further transformed, the result is the five qualities in earth, which are smell, taste, form, touch, and sound. All the activities of transformation take place by the appropriate aid of the Purusha in his form of consciousness, Chaitanya. Bear with me, it's just two more paragraphs. There are three kinds of ahankara: vaikarika, sattvika, tajasa, rajasika, and tamas. The gross elements are born from the sattvika ahankara, and the ten senses are born from the rajasika ahankara. There are two types of senses, those requiring knowledge, jnana indriyani, and the working senses, karma indriyani. The eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin are the five senses for acquiring knowledge, and speech, hands, feet, anus, and genital, the five working senses. Even if the five gross elements, Panchamahabhut, combined with the subtle elements, Shukshmabhut, there is still no activity unless the atomic conscious jiva enters into them. As soon as the jiva, which is a localized particle within the ray of Bhagavan's glance, enters into the body made of Mahabhutva and Shukshmabhutva, all the activities are set in motion. The sattvika and rajasika gunas become fit to function when they combine with the tamasika objects that are transformations of pradhan. One should deliberate on the functions of avidya and pradhan in this way. Last paragraph. There are 24 elements of maya, the five gross elements, mahabhuta, namely earth, water, fire, air, and touch, the five sense objects, namely smell, taste, form, and touch, the five senses for acquiring knowledge, the five working centers, mind, intelligence, chitta, and hankara. There are 24 elements of material nature. The atomic jiva who enters into the body made of 24 elements is the 25th element, and Paramatma is the 26th. So this is basically Sankhya, how the world is analyzed, how God made the world. In this very, very interesting, progressive, and orderly way, for life to exist, there are 200 various parameters of different functions that must be precise. And only a fool would say that this happens by chance. The material science, you know, the people who want to support the theory that it's just by chance, they come up with this ridiculous theory called multiverse that it's phenomenally improbable. It's phenomenally improbable. And phenomenal improbability should never be used as an option. You wake up every morning and you see a snowman, and it goes on for 4 years. And every single time, it was just the wind blowing. I mean, who's going to... And the possibility of the universe existing in that way is a higher probability. What reasonable person will accept that as a suitable explanation for something? So they come up that there's multiverse, there's, you know, unlimited universe, and we just happen to be in the one that things come together like that. And not only come together like that, continue to come together like that. So the improbability exponentially is always increasing, because it's still by chance that I'm functioning logically, I'm moving, that the computer's working, that it's still all by chance. So the chance of all this coming together and continually coming together belies reason on the platform of chance. But anyway, this is how God has organized it. Anybody like to... say hello today on New Year's Eve.
Hey, Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Bogil.
Well, I see you didn't ask a question, so I'll just make a comment that...
You can ask a question.
Well, I'll definitely have to listen to this recording like a billion times to get anywhere. But
I will, but it also.
But it is one of my actually favorite subjects. This how Krishna makes the world, basically, you know, starting from the pradhan and all that.
Yeah.
But one question I can manage to ask is, this concept of touch coming from sound, I mean, it was in a series of so many things coming from so many things, but I'll just pick one. How does touch come from sound?
Because ether is the most subtle element. And air is the next subtle element. So that's the way we see that there is a progression. And we see that in the subtlety of air, it also has the quality of touch. So there is some connection between ether and air. It's just the next one in terms of its manifestation of objects. So how it actually is, but they are connected.
And you just said that ether is the most subtle element, but we also said that the false ego is the most subtle element.
Of the gross elements, it's the most subtle. Of the gross elements. There's five subtle and five gross.
Right. Okay, anyway, I also want to say that, I had to listen to the recording of last Wednesday's class.
Yeah.
Mostly because I was listening to it in a horizontal position, have good results.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was actually one of my favorite classes. It was, like, so great. And in that class, a question that I had asked the same question as Rajanat, like, 19 years ago, and I feel like I finally got a satisfaction to that question about why Krishna, who is perfect, exposed us to the suffering of the material world. And it was really a very satisfying answer you gave last week.
Can you give me the answer? What was it? I mean, I'd be so happy to understand.
Well, the way I understood you is that, basically, Krishna's perfection is that he gave us free will, which allows us to love. You can't love without free will. And, the consequence of having free will is that, we have the choice to stay in the spiritual world, come here. But, having that option is worth the experience of praying, even if it means that we misuse our free will, that this correctional process is worth the experience of praying. We cannot have the experience of praying if we don't have free will, and free will means having the option to come here, which, is on us that we did that, I hear. But anyway, so that works.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Okay, Happy New Year, Gail, and give my regards to you, Joseph, and
your
daughters.
Thank you.
Okay?
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, too.
Yeah, we'll have a little family lunch today. It's like a family here. They'll just a few people. Okay.
Is Bhagavan still there?
Yeah, she lives here.
In Mayapur?
Yeah, she lives here in Mayapur now.
Oh my God. Oh. I gotta get caught up. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Rajarade.
Rajarade, it seems like Jersey is very philosophical because it's mostly Jersey on the Wednesday class. Okay, thank you. And best to your family, too. And the deities there, Radhisham Sundar. Okay. So
thank
fortunate
you.
To have that temple there. Amazing. What a blessing. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, Gordon Bhakti Das. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. You're all so fortunate with those deities there. Anybody else say hello? Okay, we'll end now. Bunch of coffee, maybe a second.